join KRVS for 2 hours of hardcore multi-generational roots rock reggae here on Jamon. Cecil here, booming the Ariites every Sunday night live in studio from 9 to 11 p.m. The rebroadcast Saturday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m. Rasta Reggae Radio, doing it King David style. That's Jamon, here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to the kitchen table. It's so nice to have you here with us today, and I want to begin by welcoming my co-host here, Michelle York. She's also our executive producer, but I'm going to change your title to co-host. I think
is that right?
Well, that elevates you to a new position. You are the co-host of the show. I am
Stella. Dean, I got a promotion.
The co-host.
She is the co-host of the big show, but not to be confused by the host.
And it only took 16 years.
And I tell you what, congratulations on moving up to the head of the class very quickly.
In all honesty, I am very humbled. Thank you.
You are the co-host, and what a better co-host I could ever hope to have. I couldn't even imagine. I'm not even interested in searching out a better co-host. After 16 years, you know what I thought to myself?
What?
Today is the day. I'm going to just go ahead and do it. After 16 years of searching for a replacement, I am done. She is my co-host. You are my co-host, baby.
Search is not quite over, so we'll see.
And then, of course, across the glass wall is our good buddy, Dean Slam. His new name is the Slam Man, I call him.
Slam Man.
Yeah, he's my Slam Man. That's exactly right. He's in charge of our music, and what a great guy he is. What's going on? You had a good week?
Oh, we had a great week. I tell you, the weather, starting to chill out there.
Yeah, just beautiful out there. Now, I know you're in charge of music and social media. You're our social media expert. I don't want to say anything. I mean, just between the three of us, Michelle is not that good at social media.
Uh-oh. Nor is John. We're too old.
No surfing. They're not surfers.
I do a little surfing, but I keep falling off the board.
Yeah.
But Michelle, I can't find the board. But that's all right. You know, she's very talented in other ways. Huh? That's why I made her a co-host today. And by the way, I'm going to just go on the record just soon and knock it out. You're the co-host.
Well,
does that
I appreciate
mean he brings
that,
chocolate?
He's
does
the
that
co-host.
Mean he brings...
Yeah, he's in charge of chocolate.
Okay.
He's in charge. You know, I always say this is my favorite time of year, but every time is my favorite time of year because new fruits and vegetables are in, new gardens are in. If it's hot, it means that there's watermelons. If it's cold, it means that there's apples on the trees all around the United States, pumpkins on the stand. It's the holidays. I mean, how can it not be my favorite time of year every day?
Well, that is a blessing.
Have you noticed driving down the highways, all the little roadside stands are overfilled now with color? For most of the months, there's like single or maybe double color, but now they're kind of like a kaleidoscope of color. It's a stained glass of roadside trucks.
It really is. With those green mustard leaves, oh, I love mustard greens.
Oh.
And the squash, the pumpkins, the crookneck squash, you know, the Judy Maw.
That's the Couchard,
yes.
The striped crookneck pumpkin that you make judiment, or as the French, now, Slam Man, you might not know that the word judiment is the French word for pumpkin, but it's also a dish that the woman I loved most in my life, Mary Fasher. You remember Mary Fasher?
I
love
her. Well, I never met Mary, but
well, Mary Fasher was this fabulous African-American cook who had six beautiful children of her own and came into our house to raise the Falls children after my mother died when I was 7 years old, and Mary, Mamie, as we called her. What judiment she could make. Oh,
when she cooked a pumpkin down, she'd cook a pumpkin down, Michelle. She would cook a pumpkin. I'm cooking pumpkin down right now. Mary Fascio, wow, was she a great mother to all of us. And what a cook she was. I attribute most of my cooking proud, so to speak, my will over the stoves. The stoves just bow down when I walk up. I actually attribute that to Mary Fascio. Anyway, y'all, as we see that, as I mentioned, kaleidoscope of color, and Michelle mentioned the beautiful green leaves of the mustard green plants out there and the spinach and all of that, I'm noticing the pumpkins coming in. In my humble opinion, pumpkins are the most loved yet underutilized vegetable of all. Don't you agree with that?
I do agree with that. We have them for Halloween, of course, in fall decor. You know, everybody has the hay, and they have the pumpkins and the different kinds, the little acorn pumpkins.
Yeah, all the little different ones, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And other than pumpkin pie on the holiday table, Thanksgiving or Christmas, when do we eat pumpkin?
I tell you, it is the most underutilized, but yet one of the best. Could I add more wonderful things to your culinary technique than I think any other vegetable? And what creativity. I mean, I do, well, we're going to talk about pumpkin dishes that I do in a
minute. That's right. It's very nutritious.
Very nutritious as well. Anyway, as you mentioned, you see that little taste of autumn on the front stoop of everybody's house right now. Everybody's displaying pumpkins. They're coming into season. And, of course, for Halloween, these beautiful orbs, as I call them.
Orbs.
These beautiful orbs are desecrated with a variety of scary faces and other horrible carvings. And then what happens the day after Halloween? I'll tell you what happens. Into the trash. What a shame. What a shame. I wish I had a pumpkin trash truck that I could go around. I wish I had a pumpkin trash truck. That way I could go around everybody's house and pick up the beautiful orbs that had been desecrated and put them into my pots.
That's exactly right. A recycling program. I think you're on to something. Pumpkin recycling.
That's not a bad idea.
I know. Like we do. We recycle Christmas trees.
Yeah.
Coastal conservation.
And then I could actually give awards and maybe 50 cents or something to the best pumpkin I pick up along the way. Anyway, y'all, these pumpkins, which illuminate All Hallows' Eve, are now but a memory amid a mirage of discarded candy wrappers and empty juice containers. It's a crime. In fact, I think I'm going to start, Michelle, the first pumpkin and jack-o'-lantern recycling program ever. I got a slogan. I'm going to have a truck.
You've got a slogan already.
On the side of my trucks. And I want you to listen to this and tell me if you think it's good. I think I'm going to say, give me your pumpkin and I'll cook you something. That's on the side of my truck when I pick up free pumpkins. Now, it's free. Man, I'm not paying for it.
Oh, no.
I'm helping people out is what I'm saying.
Exactly. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's exactly truck. Right. Give me your pumpkin. I'll cook you something.
And it could be like that Wienermobile.
Yeah, just like that. It might be a big
big pumpkin.
I'd make things that people would long for. And I'd ask people stories to tell me stories about your holiday and your grandmother. And I'd make pumpkins into that. And people would buy them because of nostalgia. And they'd buy with tears in their eyes.
So you're picking up pumpkins and recipes as you go down.
Absolutely. And paying 50 cents to somebody who did a really good one and or promising that I'll pay him 50 cents somewhere along the way if things work out. You think it's a good idea?
Well, I think it could be.
I can see it, and I love that logo. Give me your pumpkin, I'll cook you something.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, all seriousness, which I thought I was, I love pumpkins, and these jack-o'-lanterns are just waiting to become somebody's pumpkin pie if you're smart. The Native Americans had the right idea. They considered pumpkin one of the three sisters, one of the three gifts of the great creator, corn, squash, and beans. And, of course, squash contained all of the pumpkin categories. They considered it gifts of the great creator. Legend has it that as long as the Native Americans had the seed of these three vegetables on their person, that they would need for absolutely nothing, because the corn, the beans, the squash could give them all the nutrition. They could build their homes. The corn stalks could be roofs of the teepees, on and on and on. Anyway, they would never find themselves in want or need if they had those three gifts to season with them.
That's right. And they were very inventive with the pumpkins, because they did use these pumpkins and other gourds as drinking vessels or
plates. They never wasted anything.
Bowls. And they cooked the pumpkin meat. Sometimes they dried it into flour for bread, or they dried it and used it as a coating. What do you think? They would coat, like, meat with it?
No, absolutely. Just like we do cornbread or flour coating on meat. They would dry the pumpkin in the sun and then mash it down into a powder. And they would use it as a thickening agent, or they would use it to coat venison or ducks or things like that. Or they made fritters out mm-hmm. of it once they got pots and oil to cook in. I mean, they would
What do you think a pumpkin roux?
When we were doing the research, I thought to myself, now, at this time of year, why not dehydrate pumpkin, make a good pumpkin flour, and saute and coat a piece of speckled trout with pumpkin
nice.
Flour.
So,
oh, wow.
Wouldn't that be nice in the restaurant?
Now, look, we've already found another use for the pumpkins that we're going to collect off. The door stoops.
Well, I'm going to have little signs on the truck of things I'll do with the pumpkins, and that'd be one of them. Pumpkin can, flour.
Can you really make flour out
Absolutely
of...
Absolutely, you can. You can dehydrate any starch, and from the dehydrated starch, you can create a powder.
No kidding.
And you can do eggplant powders. You can do any kind of powder.
Does that make it gluten-free?
I'd have to check into that.
Not to check in.
We're just trying to get our business off the ground. Now you want to know if it's healthy. You see, we're not waiting to health food yet. We're the dehydrating pumpkins in the flour to cook my fish. Anyway, y'all, we've come by the tradition of having pumpkins on our table every single season like this. By 1620, the Native Americans in New England had developed excellent recipes and uses for pumpkin. A popular recipe was a type of pudding that was sweetened with maple sugar, which the Pilgrims transformed into more of an English-style custard pie. And that's kind of where our pumpkin pie has got mm-hmm. its origin. Pumpkin seeds turned out to be a real treasure, too, since these oily and protein-rich seeds provided fat and protein that were really lacking in these early colonists as well as the Native American diet. Even pumpkin blossoms were used as delicacies, and they were either fried or stewed. And I love any type of the squash blossoms or the pumpkin blossoms. You can fill them up with crab meat or things like that, and you can deep fry them into a fritter, and that's a big, big deal in restaurants today. Early American settlers made pumpkin pie by actually filling out the whole hollow of the shell with milk and honey and spices, and they baked the whole pumpkin in the receptacle.
That's interesting.
And absolutely, and created this big old pumpkin pie. Now, of course, you need a lot of friends, but I guess in a settlement, there's
no lack of friends.
No lack of need for eating a pumpkin pie either. Especially, you can imagine a pilgrim yelling, "Hey, all the pie's done. Come on out. You got this big old 20-pound pumpkin you're dipping into." I think that's pretty good. I can see it.
You know, pumpkins are one of those vegetables that's grown worldwide.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, 6 of the 7 continents. So we all know which one it doesn't grow in, right? Antarctica.
Now, let me tell you something, Slammer. This would be a good business in Antarctica, growing pumpkins. You always want to go where there's a need.
Yeah, there's a need, but there are also no people.
As an entrepreneur, I would think to myself, now that's a good business proposition. I would go grow pumpkins in Antarctica. I'll try that out.
There may be a market.
I was with you until that. You know, when I hear 30 below is a normal temperature somewhere, and that's not even Antarctica, I get chilled.
Ever heard of a greenhouse? Okay, anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, you know, pumpkins are believed to have originated in Central America. And seeds from related plants have been found in Mexico as far back as 7,000 years ago. Squash and all of its varieties have been staple foods in the diets of Native peoples, and especially American Native peoples. Pumpkins can be grown by just about anybody who has a plot of land. Now, I could be the one that refutes that because I haven't tried to plant a pumpkin.
Oh, you throw the seeds on the ground, that pumpkin's going to grow.
Really?
Yep. The problem with pumpkin is that it takes over the whole yard like a watermelon. Like when you plant a pumpkin or watermelon seed, you got to move out of your house.
So the great pumpkin, Charlie Brown, wasn't that big a deal, right?
Y'all, we've wasted all 15 minutes talking about this, and I hadn't even told you about All Saints Day that we're talking about, All Hallows Eve. But we're going to talk about all that when we come back. So anyway, y'all, you don't want to go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to bring you back to the seriousness of pumpkin.
At Care VS, we know that we fit your day. You wake up to the news, and the moment your feet hit the ground, you're listening to Care VS for the updates you need on the stories of the day. Then, after a morning's worth of award-winning news coverage, you're in need of music to help you get through your day. But then, as you get in your car for the commute home, you find yourself quickly tuning to KRVS for your end-of-day briefing on the news. You couldn't ask for a better station, and we couldn't ask for more generous listeners. Since we're a public radio station, we depend on listeners like you for support. So please call or give online at carevs.org now during our fall fundraiser and help pay for the music and news that you depend on each day. And thank you.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, now broadcasting in HD radio technology.
Everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio.
We're talking about food and culture show. Yep. Today the food is pumpkin.
And y'all, we do want to hear from you on our Facebook page. Anyway, y'all, today we're talking about pumpkin, and it's hard to talk about pumpkin without mentioning Halloween, which is just one day before the Christian tradition of All Saints Day.
You know, the connection between All Hallows Eve and All Saints Day kind of finds its origin in Ireland. And, you know, a lot of times it's language barriers that kind of cause this merge. But it's also because of Catholicism and the Celtic Druid religion. Both had important holidays, events, traditions happening at the same time. At the end of October, the Celts celebrated Samhain, or Summer's End, or a Celtic New Year.
You know, those Celts had a word for everything.
Yeah.
You know, those Celts had a word for everything. We call it summer. They call it Samhain. I mean, imagine. Anyway, go ahead.
Samhain. I wonder if that's why we have Halloween.
Anyway, Samhain was Summer's End. That's right. We make it light of the Celtic tradition, but we shouldn't.
No. In Celtic lore, the year is divided into two halves. You know, the half associated with dark, the half associated with light, and Samhain began the dark half. Well, it's true. You know, it does begin the darker time of the year, and it's that time of year that's the veil between the earthly life and the spirit life is most transparent.
And I want to mention here a very important fact. Swami, you want to hear this right here. A very important fact. In those days, during the Celtic rule, the women of the house prepared for a communal feast with the dearly departed as the guest of honor.
Even back then, men were lazy. I'm kidding. I'm sorry, I'm surrounded by men. They probably cooked better.
And the departed guest would be the guest of honor at the table, so they were getting things ready to go, and all the doors and the windows were left unlatched, which is different from the day. If the departed are coming, you want to lock the windows. You see how things change, huh?
That's right.
The windows were left unlatched. Special cakes were made exclusively for the spirit's consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And on this New Year's Day, the Irish would extinguish their heart fires and gather to wait for the Druid priest to light the bonfire, which I think is a great tradition.
Mm-hmm. I love this tradition.
Set up bonfires of the new year, and each family would have to go to the fire after they had cleaned their hearts out and the women had gotten everything clean and ready for the new fire. They would go to the bonfire that was lit by the Druid priest and bring the fire back to the family hearth, and it would be the new fire for the new year. I know there must be something tied into that tradition today, right?
There must be.
No, I think in the Catholic Church there's a new fire that burned at Easter.
There's the lighting of the new fire, and even in some communities in the United States, there were, in back days, there was that person in the woods and the forest that kept the fire burning for everybody.
Wow.
Fire was so important that if the fire went out, what do you do? I mean, how do you stay warm? How do you cook? How do you boil anything? And not that many years ago, there was progress in these mountains. They were building a subdivision or something like that. And this lady refused to move from the mountaintop. She would not move. And they said, "What is the problem?" And the guy said, "It's because she's the keeper of the flame. She's the keeper of the fire.
Where was that?
Somewhere in the Appalachians or something. And so they brought a bulldozer in, they picked up the fire, and they moved it and moved her to the bottom of the mountain.
Wow. When the Catholics arrived in Ireland, they didn't care much for the Druid festival. In their attempt to transform this pagan worship, two Christian celebrations were superimposed on the Celtic tradition. So you have the Feast of All Saints, November the 1st, and the Feast of All Souls on November the 2nd, because All Saints Day was a holy day of obligation. There was always a vigil mass the night before, kind of a midnight mass, and All Hallows Eve became, of course, Halloween.
A lot of Christian holidays that are kind of built on top of pagan ritual celebrations and costumes. You dress up for Halloween?
Absolutely. I'm dressing up as a druid and I'm carrying a big old pail of fire with me. Huh? That's what I'm doing. Huh? And if you want your new fire, your New Year's fire, come to me right here. I'm adding that on the pumpkin truck.
Well, you know, because the druids believed that the evil spirits came at that time to collect souls, that's why they wore the costumes. They wanted to look like somebody of the spirit world so that they wouldn't be taken. So that's why you see witches and you see skeletons and you see ghosts and goblins. And they were trying to confuse the evil spirits. And of course, there were a lot of games played by children, you know, bobbing for apples. I bet you went bobbing for apples.
I went for bobbing for apples. Absolutely, I did. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the kids would go door to door the first trick or treating, but they were asking for nuts and apples and fruit.
And not to frighten the neighbors away, so to speak.
But if they wanted to frighten the neighbors, they turned cabbages or turnips into figures. They'd carve little things, and then they'd knock them on the door.
They'd carve a cabbage and throw.
Yeah, carve a cabbage or carve a turnip. When immigrants came, there were no turnips, but there were lots of pumpkins here in America. So they started carving pumpkins instead of turnips.
So that's
cabbages.
How the tradition of jack-o'-lantern came.
Exactly.
Along. Now, Michelle, I probably shared with you before, but I didn't share with Slama. I never shared with you. Okay. When I was a young boy, my mother made me a costume. It was a clown costume.
Michelle, very apropos. Your mother was very intuitive.
Yeah, she didn't want to be nice because she made me a clown costume. You think she was intuitive. I see. Anyway, I went to my friend F.A. Byers' house. F.A. Byers was having a Halloween party, and my mother made me a little clown costume, and when she sewed it all together and put me in it, she actually sewed me in the costume.
She sewed you up in
she
there?
She sewed me up in the costume. And of course,
so the joke was on you.
Well, it was kind of throw together. You know, in those days, that was not much money. You know, you had the old Singer machine. I mean, this is early on. And so I got to F.A. Byers' house, and of course, into the celebration, we finally got, and we seen this for the first time. I had never been bobbing for apples. I mean, we were poor country folk. I started bobbing for apples, and slam, man, that was about the time I realized I had to go to the bathroom.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I had to go to the bathroom. Uh-huh. I had to go do number one. I had to go do number one, and I kept pointing to the lady with my first finger, so I had number one. And she said, well, just go number one. I said, I can't get out of this thing. I'm sewed in. And she said, well, you better run to your house. You know, we were in the country about a block away. So I had to take off with my little clown outfit and leave the festivities behind as I was screaming at my mom to get ready to rip this thing off. So whenever I hear bobbing for apples, I have to go to the bathroom. Whenever I hear
anybody. Do you need to excuse yourself right now?
Yeah, right now, y'all excuse me. I got to run to the bathroom. But Michelle, I've carried that memory through 50 years.
And it's quite a memory. Do you know, in Sleepy Hollow, New York, they have a pumpkin glow, and it's like 4,000 jack-o'-lanterns along the countryside. Wouldn't that be awesome? And I saw online these fabulous carvings. I mean, you want to talk about, they're serious about their carving. So they had the headless horseman, you know, illuminated on the side of this pumpkin. I mean, just really spectacular.
Well, I think some of the greatest art that's going on right now is the pumpkin carving art. I mean, really, I mean, there's a whole new toolkit associated with pumpkin carving.
Stencils.
Stencils of every kind.
Some people paint their pumpkins now.
I saw one the other day. It was this beautiful candle, and it was like a stained glass door of a cathedral because they carved almost all the way through the pumpkin just to the membrane on the inside, which I couldn't quite figure out. And right in the middle, they carved a candle. And then, of course, they put a candle on the inside, so the candle was flickering, and the stained glass of the church on the thickness of the membrane had these different glows of color. I mean, it was absolutely stunning, and I thought to myself, how long did it take for somebody to do this particular pumpkin?
Yeah.
And then to think, as I say, that people have, for some reason, I don't quite know why, they push the pumpkin, so to speak, on back burner.
Mm-hmm.
And pumpkin is one of the absolute most famous and delicious dishes you can possibly do.
Well, let's be honest. A watermelon is huge, but you're eating it raw. But you're not eating a pumpkin raw. So maybe it's just a little intimidating to cut. It's hard to cut a pumpkin, okay? I'm just going to say. And to peel it. Can you cut it, put it in the oven, bake it, and then peel it? Or scrape it, I guess. You would scrape the meat off.
And I often talk about Papa's Orang, right? Papa's Orang had this huge garden in St. James Parish. And, of course, he followed the seasons religiously on what went into the rolls of that garden. And he always had the crookneck cochon. Mm-hmm. Which everybody sees on the roadside, and some people don't quite know what it is. That's why when you say it's the pumpkins and the squash family, well, think of what a cochon looks like. Cochon looks like a nice crookneck squash more than
it does. Yeah, it does.
And it does fall into that category of squash. Papa would grow a couple of hills of cochon and a couple of the hills of the round, the orange pumpkin that we see as jack-o'-lanterns today. And we ate pumpkin every which way imaginable. My mare would make some of the best bowls of jutiment, as we call it. Might even give you that recipe a little bit later.
If I behave.
Yeah, if you behave. But she would take these big, beautiful crock bowls, and we would come back from school, and sitting in the center of the table would be this cooked pumpkin flesh that was cooked down with the brown sugar, because you know what season we're in right now as well, right?
Sugar.
That's
sugar
right.
Harvest.
So, that's right. So you have the pumpkin and the brown sugar from the sugar mills all working at the same time. You have muscadines in the swamps of Louisiana. You have persimmons in the swamps of Louisiana. You have the pawpaws and all those other wild fruit and berries that's growing out there. And all of these things go so well together with the fall season. So Papa would have these big, beautiful pumpkins that she would cook into what we lovingly refer to as jutiment. Mm-hmm. Jutiment, the French word for pumpkin. And she would put all of these flavors together. And we didn't worry about putting them into a pie shell. We didn't worry about putting them into turnovers. They were just cooked into this big crock bowl that would keep it warm. And then you just came up to the table and there were some little bowls there and you'd fill it up with jutiment and you'd go sit on the front step and you'd eat it.
Almost like dessert.
Oh, it was the most comforting food I think I ever ate. And it gave me a love of pumpkins. And of course, nothing better this time of year than a luscious pumpkin soup. I mean, think of the weather kind of gets a little bit cold. And there's so many varieties of the pumpkin soups. Pumpkin with seafood, crab meat, pumpkin that's also made into these fabulous desserts. We do a creme brulee that's absolutely incredible with pumpkin. Because pumpkin goes so well with brown sugar and sweet. Most people think of it as that only, but of course you can also stew pumpkin down into risottos. It's a very creative opportunity for you to use pumpkins, and they're inexpensive. That's another thing about it. I mean, everybody's worried about cost of food. It gives you a lot of opportunity for creativity. It's inexpensive. It holds well, too. Another thing I remember, Papa used to have this big old mule barn, and he would just stack it full with pumpkins because they would last for, I don't know, a few months for sure.
Yeah.
They would last in the barn. So you had them all through the winter season. And then you'd get into Thanksgiving and Christmas. You had the pumpkin pies and all the pumpkin soups and the things that are associated with the fall time of year.
Well, you know, and sometimes I think we just need to open our mind, just like you're saying, to creativity. And it helps me to think of something as a substitution. I did a shepherd's pie last year. But it was a special recipe, and instead of using mashed potatoes, I actually used butternut squash. And it was delicious, but it's one of those things that I really wouldn't have thought about on my own, but I found this recipe, butternut squash on top of the shepherd's pie. And we kind of do that in the cookbooks, too, when we did the hunt book and when we did the fish book, just thinking of some things that we... Tacos are an easy fix when you get home from work. I mean, it doesn't take that long, but you can also make venison tacos or you could make fish tacos. And sometimes I think we just have to think about pumpkin that way as well, just like you were talking about the soups or tarts. It's just so much more than pumpkin pie.
Well, and you were mentioning about taking the meat off of pumpkin and that it was difficult to chop it and how do you get it out? Do you roast it? Well, let me tell you what, the Native Americans were masters at this. So when they wanted to get into these really hard nuts of some kind, I mean, they would always put it in water and let it swell up and then put it in a fire and steam it open, you know. Well, they did the same thing with pumpkin. They would go ahead and add that pumpkin to the fireside where it would slowly roast on the shell, and then they could scoop it right off, mm-hmm. pull it off. They didn't worry about how to chop a raw pumpkin. They would just break it open, put it next to the fire. As the meat started to soften and steam, they would be able to take it right off. The microwave is a perfect way to handle pumpkin today that way as well. I mean, just very quickly cutting it open, taking the seeds out, putting that half a pumpkin or a quarter of it in the microwave, zapping it on high for about 5 minutes or so. You're going to be able to take a spoon and just take that creamy pumpkin right off of it, mm-hmm. boiling it. I mean, there's a lot of ways, and it's not going to change flavor. The roasted pumpkin just adds flavor to the dish.
Which sounds really good. Now, you know, John, a friend of ours is on the phone.
Oh, so he's listening to us, want to get in. Who's your friend?
Sandy Sharp.
Oh, say, oh, Covey Rise.
From Covey Rise, that's right.
I thought you told me he was out of town. I thought you told me he was running around.
Well, he is running around, but, you know, he can't resist. He can't resist talking to us. You know, Covey Rise Farms is in Husser, Louisiana. We've been there a couple of times. They've added to the farm because they've added a farm up the road.
Right, right.
So it's not just...
Well, it was a hunting lodge.
I mean, it's a hunting lodge. Yeah, yeah. But they grow vegetables, including pumpkins.
They grow a lot of vegetables for us and all the chefs.
Yes, they do. We can ask Sandy about that. And now they raise ducks and hogs, too.
I know all about it. I just bought a hog from him.
Henry. 365-pound Henry is going to be dinner at Revolution for somebody.
It is already.
So, Sandy, welcome to Stirring It Up. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank y'all for having me. It's great to hear your voice, John. Been so busy with your new restaurant, I hadn't had a chance to catch up with you.
Well, I tell you how you can catch up with me, Sandy. You come sit in one of them chairs and let me feed you over down there all the time.
Not all the time. Every now and then I bump into you guys down there. And, oh, John just came or just left, or he's going here, going there. He's the busiest man I know.
Look, I appreciate it. Well, where are you right now? I called a chat with you yesterday about something, and he said you were out of town. Where are you?
Well, actually, my daughter is taking one semester of her senior year in Idaho, and we're on our way to see her. And so I'm sitting right now outside of the terminal in Salt Lake City, Utah, about to get a rental car.
Oh my God.
Well, thank you so much for spending a couple of minutes with us. I appreciate it. We were saying that Sandy has that beautiful Covey Rise farm. How far out of Baton Rouge is that? About an hour or so?
About an hour, yes, sir. Yep.
And it started out as a hunting lodge where people could go and hunt pheasant and quail and all these wonderful bird-type hunts, skeet shooting, etc. How did it grow into the vegetable farm?
John, I got interested in agriculture, I guess, in the summer of 2009 and looked at lots of different opportunities to get into the commodity farming business and just didn't find the right one. And I was with a friend of mine from Baltimore, Maryland, actually north of Baltimore, about 40 minutes, who's been raising vegetables since the mid-80s. And he asked me what I was up to. We were in the mountains of North Carolina where we'd met at summer camp years ago. I told him I was interested in finding a farm, but I was having a hard time finding one that suited me in the Mississippi Delta. And he said, well, have you ever thought about vegetables? I said, no, but I'm all ears. He goes, well, you need to come up and see what we're doing at One Star Farm in Whitehall, Maryland. And so I went up there. Drew has been farming for years, raising vegetables for the wholesale market, and he'd recently switched his marketing scheme over to what they call a CSA. And I asked him if that was Confederate States of America. He said, no, that stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And Drew has a very successful CSA at this point. He has over 1,900 members.
Wow.
Now, y'all recently started a similar program. Is that right?
That's right, Michelle. We have a CSA on the North Shore. Unlike Maryland, where Drew has a season that lasts essentially half the year, growing from June all the way up to Thanksgiving, we have two seasons because the heat of the summer is so hard on our vegetable crops in Louisiana. We do 12 weeks in the spring and 12 weeks in the fall. In fact, this past week was our first week of CSA, and it's exciting for my wife, Ann, who runs it, and all of the participants who have come back a number of seasons running and really enjoyed the same quality heirloom variety of vegetables that we grow for the high-end restaurants. They can have and enjoy them in their home.
How's the weather over there, by the way, in Salt Lake City?
Well, it's a little overcast. It feels like it's about high 50s, low 60s, and a little bit different than what we have in Louisiana.
I bet. Sure. Well, Sandy, you just hang on for a minute. We'll be back in just a second or so, and then we'll pick up our conversation. Y'all don't go anywhere.
And she thought, I wonder how on earth that country bumpkin found his way to town. And she said, hello, country bumpkin. Frost out on the pond. pumpkin. I've seen some sights, but man, you're something. Where'd you come from, country bumpkin? It was just a short year later.
Hi, everyone. This is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we've got the Bow Keys at the 2012 Memphis in May Bill Street Music Festival. Then we'll head to Helena, Arkansas for the King Biscuit Blues Fest and hear from Big Bill Morganfield. That plus our feature host, the late Jerry Wexler, will have an on-the-record series from the Bill Street Caravan Vault. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
You must be Daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. You must be Daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. Well, it's 11:15 and you're sleeping on the bedroom floor.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Starting It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And I was Daddy's little pumpkin myself. And I did sleep on the bedroom floor. Huh? I was Daddy's little pumpkin. Look how I turned out, Michelle. Y'all have to tell you, Michelle is so sentimental. She actually started crying.
Don't say the name.
I'm not going to say the name because you're going to start crying again.
Know.
That was very sweet, though, for you to start crying. You said that song reminded you of your daddy. You had tears in your eyes, huh? Yep. Whenever I see a belt around a man's waist, I think of my dad. I say, that reminds me of daddy right there. Anyway, y'all, it's so nice to have you at the kitchen table again. And I have our good friend and business associate, I might mention.
That's exactly right.
Go ahead.
Sandy Sharp. He's calling in from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Standing on the sidewalk in cold, cloudy weather talking to us about
pumpkins. Talking to us about pumpkins.
That's good.
Where are his little pumpkins today? You know, he's from Covey Rise Farms in Husser, Louisiana, just outside of Hammond. And we were talking about the CSA program when we left off a while ago. So how do you join that program, Sandy? It's kind of like a membership, isn't it?
What we have is one location that's in Covington. It's Simply Gourmet. Melissa Whittington has a terrific gourmet shop over there. The way the program works is a 12-week program, and we had our first week last week. But if you miss that week, it's no problem. You can sign up for the remaining 11 weeks and so on and so forth through the season. The pickup is on Wednesday afternoon between 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock. The easiest way to sign up is to go to www.covey.com and scroll to the bottom of the page and click on the farm icon. The way the program works is we grow a wide variety of vegetables, as y'all know, having used them at Restaurant Revolution. Thank you, John.
I appreciate it.
We have as many as 30 to 40 different types of vegetables at any one time, and then within each type, multiple varieties. So at different times of the year, I might have between 150 and 200 different varieties of vegetables in the fields.
Wow.
But what we do each week is we deliver approximately 8 different types of vegetables in a quantity sufficient to feed a family of 4. To Simply Gourmet, and the CSA members come in and pick it up and go home and really enjoy it. It's been a lot of fun for us, a lot of fun for our members who keep coming back.
I know one thing, we intrigue our diners at the restaurant by your array of vegetables and your beautiful vegetables, tomatoes, that I think 13 tomato heirloom salad we have on our menu is just absolutely incredible. But I'm happy to say that this week we hung up a couple of beautiful hams. We did molasses cured. We actually cured some hams because you're also growing hogs and ducks, etc. So how did you expand from vegetable growing into growing of pork and ducks and other animals, I suppose, it'll grow into? How did you make that move?
Well, what's happened in the last few years is we've established some great relationships that were friends before and now business relationships with a number of our chefs down in New Orleans. And I'm so glad that you have joined the ranks of friends who are now chefs down in New Orleans. And they encouraged us to do it. They said, Sandy, you're doing a good job with these vegetables. Why don't you grow protein for us? And two in particular have really stepped up to help the process out, and that's John Besh and Dickie Brennan, who, when they were asking me to get into the duck and the hog business, I said, I'll get into the business of raising them, but I don't want to be in the processing business. And what has happened in South Louisiana and happened in a lot of places all over the country is that the real logjam in the protein business is an inspected plant where you can kill poultry it hasn't existed for many, many years. The big boys, the Sanderson Farms, the Tyson Foods, they process the chickens. They all process under a federal inspection. Now we're processing ducks under state inspection. It's probably the first state-inspected poultry plant in 40 years. And so it's a bigger story than just me raising a few ducks. I mean, it's really a pioneering effort on the part of Chris Meredith, who runs the plant, and John and Dickie, who helped finance the plant, in an effort to have a market, I guess the logjam in the market for other poultry producers. And we are now killing ducks under inspection, and Chris is getting close to being ready to start taking chickens. And so it's pretty exciting news. It's in the old Hyde Slaughterhouse facility in Robert, Louisiana. So that's kind of how it came about. We raise Muscovy and Peking, and we purchase about 1,200 birds a week and process a good portion of those, not quite 100% of them. And that's really a very unique bird, and then it tastes totally different from a typical confinement-raised bird because all birds are raised on pasture. And so where the commercially available ducks, for the most part, are raised in duck houses, similar to chicken houses, where they never see sunshine or rain, they never get to eat a bug or forage on greens, they just eat just grain, a feed-based grain. Our ducks get to eat dirt, they get to eat bugs, they get to eat grass, they get to eat the forage that we plant for them, and they get to eat the grain. So what we have is a better-tasting duck that's been really well-received by the chef community in New Orleans.
What about the pigs? I mean, you're raising those as well, and what about the slaughter of pigs?
Well, the reason that we were able to get into the protein business, John and Dickie encouraged me to get into it, but I learned enough about it to know that I didn't mind taking my chances on some turnips, but I didn't want to be responsible for livestock without having some experience. And so when the LSU swine facility was closed as part of the cutbacks at LSU, a couple that was living there on the facility, Rebecca Lorette and her husband Lewis, I went to them and I said, listen, guys, one door closes, another door opens. I'd love for y'all to come over here and be a part of raising these ducks and hogs for our chef's market down in New Orleans. And so we spent a little time visiting on it and got together, and they actually moved to Hussa. We bought additional property about 3 miles away from Covey Rise. It almost was ideal. It had a beautiful home for them to live in. They bought the home. I bought the remaining of the property. It had a great barn that we use as a brood house, and it had a hog fence all the way around the exterior of the property. We've done a lot of other fencing, but it just all kind of came together. Not only did we get the Lorettes, but we got the breeding stock from LSU that Rebecca had been nurturing through the years as part of an experiment to move away from the other white meat into a more richly marbled red meat that's very much in demand in the chef community. We got that brood stock, which is a combination or a crossbreed of Berkshire, Duroc, and some white lines. And then to augment that brood stock that we got from LSU, we found some very similar genetics in the Midwest that we brought down. And that's what you're eating at the Restaurant Revolution this week, is that crossbred hog. And it's a terrific product. Been very pleased with it. And I think all the way down the line to the guy sitting in y'all's restaurants has been very pleased with it.
No, I mean, that's great because, like I say, we did some brown sugar. I mean, the sugar houses are pumping out. It's amazing when you think of the relationships that happen. We got the pig from you. We're making some sugar-cured, brine-soaked, hoof-on hams is a couple of things we want to do. And, of course, Foul Sunday Brunch, we're going to do a little griage out of those pork chops. You know what I mean, Michelle? So, I mean, look, you talk about that hog that's gone all the way around the world almost.
You putting some pumpkin with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And the pumpkin goes perfectly with the pig, so to speak, huh? That's our P&P plate, huh? Pumpkin and pork. So let's talk about the pumpkin a little bit, Michelle.
You were telling me, Sandy, that y'all raise the Long Island cheese pumpkins.
That's right.
How'd that start? That was another chef-driven project?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not from Long Island. I don't know anything about that cheese pumpkins. But Steven Strajewski at Kushan approached me and said, Sandy, we would like you to grow a Long Island cheese pumpkin for us. And I said, all right, are we having jack-o'-lanterns? He goes, no, it is a great substitute for winter squash. It's a really great eating pumpkin. And so last year was the first year that we grew them. And then this year we've gone back and put in a couple of plots of Long Island cheese pumpkins. Isaac slowed them down a little bit and knocked back some of our production. But we are making them now, and they are absolutely delicious. Steven certainly is a James Beard Award winner, Best Chef South, and he knows his vegetables, and he was right on with this Long Island cheese pumpkin. It makes the most wonderful roasted Long Island cheese pumpkin and cauliflower soup that I've ever had. I did that myself.
That sounds delicious.
Well, you know, Sandy, I just want to say, you know, congratulations on not only your willingness to dive headfirst into a pretty amazing project, but at the same time, look toward growing that project by bringing other folks in, as you just mentioned, even people who are on the verge of looking for work as some of the cutbacks in government are taking place. And what better resources for you to have? And I know we at Revolution are just so pleased to not only be involved with you, but growing our involvement as well, because as you know, I'm so crazy about our Louisiana varieties and opportunities. I know we're going to be sitting down talking about some things as well before too long. So thank you for joining us on the sidewalk out at the airport in Salt Lake City. And thanks for all the great work that you're doing representing the best of the farm and, of course, CSA. So thanks for being with us. And you be careful out there today, okay?
John, great to visit with you. Thank you for having me on the show. Michelle, as always, great to hear your voice as well. And thank y'all.
Okay, good. And we'll come out to see you before too long. Thanks so much.
That'll be great. Thank you.
All right, Michelle. That was
Sandy Sharp.
Sandy Sharp. Isn't he something?
He's a great guy. Well, he's so passionate.
He's an attorney who got into real estate, who got into farming, who got into butchering, who got into, oh, my God.
He just got a keen eye.
He does. And he's very passion is what it's all about.
Yeah.
And he is very, very passionate. Now, we were talking about different ways to approach pumpkins.
Well, can I recommend a book?
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually have two of them. The first one that I wanted to recommend is a cookbook by Dee Dee Stovall. It's called Pumpkin, a Superfood for All 12 Months of the Year. Great work. She truly is an author after our own hearts because she took the time to kind of raise this lowly vegetable to a new status. 125 recipes are included in her book. Wonderful guidelines for storing, preparing, cooking fresh pumpkin. She even tells you how to cook the pumpkin as a serving bowl. She's divided her recipes into methods of cooking. So you've got a roasted section, a microwaving section, a boiling section, grilling, toasting, pureeing. I love it. It's a great addition to the culinary library. That's Dee Dee Stovall, Pumpkin, a Superfood for All 12 Months of the Year, and we'll have it on the website.
And I brought one of my favorite books, too.
Yes, you did.
I brought one, and this is from Joanne Farrell. It's a small little book, and it's called Pumpkin.
Just simply Pumpkin.
Pumpkin. That's all it's called, Pumpkin. It's a little old book. It's only about a half inch wide. It's got a beautiful color with a great pumpkin pie on the front of it. But what I love about this book is the uniqueness of pumpkin recipes. What I really love about it is how they have it categorized, because you don't think of normally pumpkins and appetizer snacks and side dishes. Of course, they divide it into lunch and dinner opportunities for pumpkin, baking pumpkin, of course, desserts and sweet treats with pumpkin. But there's dishes like pumpkin and beet ravioli.
Oh, boy.
So, in other words, you're having this great pumpkin, beautiful bright orange mixed with the redness of the beet inside of a ravioli, inside of a nice pumpkin cream sauce. That's to die for.
That sounds delicious.
Really sounds beautiful. Really good.
The prosciutto-wrapped pumpkin wedges that go into the oven and they roast it. You just little bite size. You put a little sugar on the pumpkin. You roast them in the oven wrapped in prosciutto, so you have the saltiness and the sweetness of the pumpkin.
Ooh, I love that.
I mean, that's the kind of recipe is that they put in this wonderful little book. So the book is Pumpkin. It's by Joanna Farrell and the 50 Delicious Recipes. Anyway, y'all, I want to talk to you a little bit. I could have given you the ginger pumpkin meringue pie that I make. And Michelle, don't forget my penne with pumpkin cream sauce. I love that. I guess we should put almost all of these because I love my pumpkin creme brulee and mini jack-o'-lanterns.
We'll definitely have all of these recipes on the web.
The pumpkin creme brulee and mini jack-o'-lanterns you're going to absolutely love. But I want to give you jugement because it's the easy thing to do with a pumpkin. And most Cajun and Creole cooks refer to the meat of the cachao, the green and white striped crookneck pumpkin, simmered in sugar and spice as jugement. And this filling could be placed into a pie shell. It could be turned into a turnover. Children sometimes simply eat it from a cereal bowl, as we did growing up. Jugement, the cachao pumpkin pie filling. I begin with a 3-pound cachao, and I'll chop that into sections. I use a hatchet. I chop it up and I remove the seeds and I put them off to the side to dry in the sun, and that's another whole matter. You scrape away that stringy matter of the pumpkin, and then you can put the pumpkin in the oven if you want to, and just at 350 degrees, cook it for about an hour until it gets very soft, and then you can scoop it out. Or you can put it in a large pot, just cover it with water by an inch. Add about 2 cups of sugar to it because I want the water to be sweet. Boil it for about 30 minutes until it gets tender, and then you scrape all the meat out and you put it into a cast iron pot and use a pastry cutter or masher, and you mash the pumpkin into the bottom of the pot. Then I add to that butter, about 3/4 of a pound of melted butter. Then I'll throw in 1/2 cup of Steen's cane syrup. You get the flavor of where I'm going? Mm-hmm. The pumpkin is soft and mushy from being boiled or roasted in the oven, and you've mashed it. Now you've added 3/4 of a pound of butter, 1/2 cup of Steen's cane syrup. You can throw in 1 teaspoon of pumpkin pie spice. I like to throw in about 1/2 teaspoon of allspice and nutmeg and ginger out of my spice cabinet. And then, y'all, 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon and 2 tablespoons of pure vanilla extract. Now, the butter in the Steen syrup, you can use brown sugar if you don't have Steen syrup. And then you just kind of slowly bring it to a simmer, cook it for about 30 minutes, stirring to blend all of those flavors together, and it's going to become nice and tender and creamy and beautiful. And you can just serve it as a filling or in a bowl, or you can put it inside of a pie, or you can eat it as a side vegetable dish. You can even do a little pecan sugar crumble on top of it, you know, with a little flour, and put it in the oven and make individual little tart dishes of this beautiful jus with that pecan topping on it like that. Anyway, y'all, it's a beautiful dish to eat. It's perfect for the season. We want to thank Sandy Sharp for being with us. Thanks to Michelle, our co-host.
Thank you very much.
Of the
nice
show,
to be here.
The Slam Man over there on our music doing a great job for us. Thank all of you. And, of course, go out, and if you don't like pumpkin, go ahead and cook one and bring it to a friend and give it to them as a warm little holiday gift and tell them it's from me. I'm going to see y'all later.
Vous êtes à l'écoute de KRVS 88.7 FM Lafayette-Lac-Charles. This is public radio for Acadiana. KRVS 88.7 FM Lafayette-Lac-Charles.
Le rendez-vous des Cadiens du Théâtre Liberté à Yunis est rendu possible en partie par le Best Stop Supermarket de Scott.